You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
One of the great deficits of Europe, it's just been Mexican food. I think for even me who doesn't come from a Mexican family, it's almost like an American birthright to like have access to like fresh, good Mexican food.
And we get a lot of Americans like, wow, this is so cool. And you know, they eat it all the time. And that's one of the things I do like about the States, that people are so open to eating many different kinds of foods. And they're maybe more knowledgeable in some respects.
Yeah, we're gonna be ending that soon. Everybody's gonna eat fucking mayonnaise sandwiches, march in military parades.
Rocio Sanchez is a boss. Classically trained at Le Cordon Bleu in her hometown of Chicago, she worked at the ineffably great WD-50 in New York, and then at NOMA in Copenhagen. But what she's doing now is truly the Lord's work. She's still in Denmark, running her own hugely, fabulously celebrated restaurant, Sanchez, along with a couple of Hija de Sanchez taquerias, forming a much-needed beachhead for legitimate Mexican flavor in Northern Europe. If she had been cooking back when I was living in that part of the world, I may have never left. We recorded this interview way back in May of this year at my friend's house in the THC-laced commune of Christiania. I was a jackass back then. You can tell by the way I keep pronouncing it Copenhagen, as if that would make me more Danish. The drink for this episode? Ginger shots, which is Rocio's pick-me-up of choice in the morning. It's like something Tim Ferriss would get into, a habit of highly successful people, of which Rocio definitely is one. I'm Nathan Thornburg, and you're listening to The Trip, drinking with exceptional people around the world.
It worked?
Yeah, I think so.
Good. Well, I'm glad. I should bring ginger shots for myself.
Somehow I feel like having something like that before I drink any coffee is good for me.
Yeah, right.
So have the ginger shot and then...
Before we start the cycle of coffee. And I should say as a note, we're recording in this sort of adorable attic room in Christiania. And there's like a Disney movie bird scene that's happening outside. So if you hear birds, it's not like ambient noise we're feeding into the podcast. These are actual birds. You are running two taquerias?
Two, yes.
And a restaurant. How would you define Sanchez? Like, what's the...
It's a very casual place, and I would describe it between a mixture of what I would want to be like a cantina and a bistro, like European style. Mm-hmm. People could say we make Mexican food, but I would like to say that we just try to make very tasty food with Mexican flavors because we are not very authentic.
There's a game to be played about like who's the most authentic, right? In terms of like who's got the real flavors, who's got the real story, who's allowed to do it,
yeah.
Yeah.
But we do make our own tortillas and we do import the corn and chiles and make that effort to have a good base. And I think we just build on top of that.
I'm not very articulate about these things, but I can say that I got off the plane from Moscow yesterday and went to Sanchez and it was fucking delicious.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, like, you had these, like, tacos with small shrimp that were, like, it felt like you were eating something very different. You know, like, they kind of popped a little bit like you were eating, like a bamboo worm or something, you know? Like, really crunchy, crispy.
They're tiny fjord shrimps. And so they're only available between now and around September. And so we just fry them and kind of cut them down a bit and cook them in a salsa diabla, which is a chile and garlic salsa.
Wow. So this is like literally a iconic Nordic summer, late
it
spring,
is,
summer
it is, yeah. Thing. And they're really fun and tasty.
And you're making tacos with them.
Well, the normal way to eat them is you have to painstakingly peel them. And I've said, if we had these like in Mexico or if we were cooking them, I'm sure we wouldn't be peeling these. We'd fry them because the skin is so tender.
Right.
It just needs a little extra
And then you just push. Go from there. The question that is going through my mind, I'm sure is going through everybody's mind, is like, how did you get here? Why Copenhagen?
I started working here in Copenhagen at NOMA way back at the end of 2009.
Okay. That's like before NOMA was NOMA, like a long time ago.
They were still kind of known. I mean, I had known about them. That's where I was inspired to go there.
Where had you been cooking before?
In New York City, WD50.
Right. Also,
great place.
Terrible restaurant.
I was there for 3 years as a pastry sous chef.
Okay.
When I was going to leave, I decided that I was going to go to Europe. Okay, go to Spain, see what all the fuss is about.
Yeah.
And also try to see if maybe classic pastry was meant for me, since I was kind of cooking in pastry mainly. Right. And when I was in Spain, I got an email from a friend saying, there's an opening in NOMA if you want to come. And I said, I will be there in 2 weeks. And I dropped all the stuff that I was doing in Spain and moved here.
That was it. And was it a pastry job?
It was a pastry job. I didn't even ask. Yeah. I just said yes.
You were that fired up to be a part of...
Yeah, I was that fired up to kind of learn something new.
Yeah.
And be challenged in many different ways.
And that wasn't happening in Spain.
Well, yes, but I really wanted a major challenge to learn different culture and different flavors and all of that. I didn't really see that in Spain for me. There were still some inspirational stuff, but I wanted something very different. And I think with NOMA, I felt that because I didn't know much about it.
Right.
And I said, this is perfect because I'm going to be learning from scratch. So then I started at NOMA. I was there for about 5 years. I was their pastry chef for the whole time. But the last 3 years was mainly in the test kitchen, which was, it's like the best job in the world.
Why is that? You don't have to please people?
No, you do have to please people, very important people, but you're just failing all day, testing all day. You know, it's the same hours. You're still working, you know, 80 hours a week or more, but you're just like testing all the time.
Huh. Is it like a farm league for dishes? Like if you do something really well there, that it's going to end up in the main restaurant?
That's your job.
Yeah.
You're working on the dishes for the restaurant.
Yeah. What's the success rate? Do you have like, you know, once every 3 months a dish comes, it's like, okay, we can send this over, or once a week, or
I mean, I haven't been there in a few years, but when I was there, it varied because a lot of it is dependent on the produce.
Yeah.
And any chef will agree. Sometimes the dish is just perfect with those three things and it's ready to go because everything is perfect. It has to do a lot with that and moments and feelings and energies. But I would say it's the majority is failure.
I mean, I think that's true of most people's work. They just don't know it.
So then after that, I opened the taqueria.
Now, were you at that point in NOMA, were you bringing in some of this Mexican palate to the stuff you were doing, or are you trying to keep it kind of neutral?
No, there was definitely some influences, and that's the great thing about having an international team working on whatever project, that everybody has their own outlook. And I think unknowingly I was also doing it. I remember making this koji mole.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah,
like this is right when they started making koji from scratch, and I began roasting it because I wanted to make like a dessert with it, like caramelized koji. Yeah. And then I was doing other things and I left it in the oven and it completely burned. And I remember I came back from the other room and someone had left it on my cutting board as a sign of, you know, like, you fucking idiot, you left it in there or something. And I just took it and I thought, wow, it's just like coffee beans or something. Like that beautiful roasted smell.
Okay.
So I started infusing it in different liquids, and it was very tasty. But the grain itself was very tasty, and then that kind of went to making a sauce from this roasted koji that had all the nuances of like a really well-balanced, complex chile mole. Damn. And I was like, oh my God, it tastes like mole.
It's crazy.
It's this complex. It feels complex, but it's only two things.
Right.
The koji and a liquid. But of course, because
time
of
in the oven.
Yeah. Time in the oven and time fermenting and all that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was like searching around. It's like mole, mole. And there's like this German guy next to me looking at me blankly, like, I don't know what mole is. But luckily I did have a Mexican girl there, and I said, taste this. Isn't this cool? And
it's just some sort of like validation of the idea. Meanwhile, the German guy is making some very advanced like Schweinehaxen or something. And wondering why you don't get what this, this amazing pork and mustard combination that he's come up with. Were you born in Mexico? Were you born in the
States? I was born in Chicago.
You were born in Chicago.
Yeah.
Had you spent time in Mexico?
I have. My parents are from Guanajuato and San Luis Potosí, north of Mexico City. And I've been there a few times. It was more
summers or...
Not so much summers, maybe once every few years. But it was until I was 19 that I started kind of going on my own. And more recently that I've been cooking.
Right.
Like going there for personal reasons or for research.
Yeah,
Especially when I wanted to make the taqueria already now in like 2013. I started visiting it more and more.
But you had never had a job in Mexico before?
No. I wanted to, but it's my life got kind of altered into different directions.
Yeah, well, here we are in fucking Denmark.
Yeah, so. I always wanted to, and it was something that my parents were not really happy with. And I think also because they were immigrants from Mexico, they're like, oh, you shouldn't really go there. It's like, but I think I want to go cook in a restaurant. And they're like, please don't do that. Like, we're not supporting that idea.
I feel like for a lot of immigrants, it's just like, you know what? We left there, for decent
reasons. And I thought that it wasn't a fight I wanted to pick with my parents, especially since they've been so supportive in everything I've done. So I didn't do that. And then I thought, I guess, just to look into it in my own way.
Yeah.
And now that's kind of how this developed, with having the taqueria and the restaurant.
What's the lineage there for cooking? Like, is it new to your family? Is it...
Well, my mom wasn't the best cook, but she did make some really nice dishes.
Yeah. What was her style? Like, what was...
it was very homey.
Yeah.
Very homey.
Just like soups.
Like pozole. Yeah. I love pozole. Yeah, like, she's so... I love my mom's pozole. Every time I would go home, I'd be like, please make me pozole. And it's such a simple dish, you know? And we make a pozole in the restaurant. It's on the menu.
But it's
with gooseberries. It's kind of those things like cookies, like chocolate chip cookies. Like, you don't want to make... Yeah. It's never going to be like mom's pozole.
Right.
So you just make a different pozole.
Right. You have to go for it. So the gooseberries, is it like the radish? Like, does it add like a little bit of...
Oh, it's really good. It's really good. Because the gooseberries are a lot like tomatillos in that acidity.
Okay. Yeah.
So like that pozole is kind of trying to be like a green pozole.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And of course, Chicago is a place with like a century of Mexican-American culture. It's like...
It's huge.
The food there is...
It's huge.
Incredible.
You can get by without even speaking English.
Yeah. It's amazing. And now it's like the gentrifiers are like chasing people from neighborhood to neighborhood, but it's still like, it's an incredible... Coming from the West Coast, it was always shocking to me. It was like here in the, like, you know, in the Midwest, you know?
But the neighborhood I grew up in, it felt like Little Mexico.
What neighborhood was that?
It's called Little Village.
Okay.
La Villita.
Yeah.
You know, it has like the fruit stand in the corner with the guy on the little push cart.
It's the paleta man.
The paleta man is running around, and tamales in the corner in the winter. It has everything.
What is it like to try to represent a piece of that here? I mean, not that you're recreating La Villita, but you're just like, you know, you for a lot of people, I assume, who come through your restaurants, this is like the best Mexican food they've ever had. I mean, listen, the food's amazing, but just in general, I don't think they probably have gone to any place that's really tried.
No.
You know, like that.
Yeah.
Is that why you have to put some caveats on it to sort of say, like, this is one way of doing it? You know,
this is our way. For example, the tamal.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not even using pork fat in it. So it's mushroom and corn.
Wow.
You know, so it's like kind of these little things that...
Yeah.
We don't want the, you know, authentic police coming over and saying, hey, that's actually, you know, you should be with this. And it's like, well, okay, we know the essence. We know everything. We don't know everything, but we know the basis of Mexican cooking and the feelings that you're getting, and that's pretty much what we're trying to do. I do want to make people feel like they're kind of eating in someone's home, you know, so the tortillas feel like freshly made and the meat feels like home cooked and everything, you know, it's not all perfect. Maybe it's a little sloppy, but it should feel like someone's been cooking for you, because I think that's what you get with a lot of like ethnic food, that it's been like slow cooking and all of these things.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like the sense of like home cooking defines a lot of restaurants.
Yeah. And I think as long as there's a base of Mexican flavors.
Yeah.
Like the chiles and the fior shrimp, for example.
Yeah.
There's nothing really Mexican about it other than that it's in a tortilla.
Right.
And then there's cabbage and the fior shrimp, but we do make a salsa diabla.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you taste it,
yeah,
I feel like it could be in Mexico somewhere.
I mean, first of all, do Danish people come to your restaurant?
They come. I'm very happy that they're coming. It is more international now in the last few months. I think especially now that NoMa reopened. We have more people in the city.
So you're part of the NoMa tour.
Slightly.
That's cheapening you.
I think it's like... it's like when you go to Paris. There's your Paris tour, I guess.
Yeah.
But, and I'm very happy for that. But when we opened in November, we did have a lot of locals.
Yeah.
And that made me so happy and proud. Because I felt like, well, this is what it's for. We're supposed to make... I'm trying to make a neighborhood place.
Yeah.
So that you have that place of like, oh, I go here for my tacos. And the feeling I had growing up.
Huh.
You know, you go here for this taco, you go here for this. Or maybe you go there for that paleta. Trying to create that place. It's very important to me to have locals. And I think there's a mix now.
What's their feeling about Mexico, Mexicans?
There's two people.
Yeah.
There's the people that are like, bravo, thank you, this is cool, and I'm so happy that I can taste all these flavors, and good job. And then there's the people like, this is so expensive, I can't believe Mexican food is this expensive, and blah, 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 and then they go off on this tangent, but all they know is, I don't know, the taco diner that's here. You know,
that's like, a thing, like a taco diner?
You know, like... places that make hard shell tacos.
Right, right.
With mincemeat and guacamole that's like cut with sour cream, stuff like that. These kind of people are like, well, I don't understand, or that's fair enough. I mean,
that's their right to not understand.
That's fair enough. I always kind of tell my staff there's people that are like going for like the Shake Shack, or I always say like Gasoline Grill here because that's my favorite burger, but. There's people that go for that in inequality, or they go to McDonald's.
Right. And
people will always go to McDonald's.
Yeah. And people from McDonald's will probably always walk in the Gasoline Grill and say, why is this burger so expensive?
Yeah. And so it's like there's a misconception that maybe these people actually think that we're just kind of opening up a tortilla bag of frozen tortillas and heating it up and here you go.
Right.
And they don't understand that we're actually importing... tons of corn from Mexico.
Yeah.
Grinding it every day.
Yeah.
Stone grinding it and making our salsa, as making everything, paying people appropriately and all of that. I mean, they don't understand it, so.
One of the great deficits of Europe has always been, I mean, Northern Europe and Central Europe in particular, it's just been Mexican food. I think for like, you know, even me who doesn't come from a Mexican family, this is like, it's almost like an American birthright. To, like, have access to, like, fresh, good Mexican food.
And we get a lot of Americans like, wow, this is so cool. and, you know, they eat it all the time. And that's one of the things I do like about the States, that people are so open to eating many different kinds of foods. And they're maybe more knowledgeable in some respects.
Yeah, we're gonna be ending that soon. Everybody's going to eat fucking mayonnaise sandwiches, you know, and march in military parades. How are you feeling about Copenhagen as like your future place? I mean, it was sort of an accident that you showed up here, but you've been here now.
Almost 9 years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
It is a long time.
I mean, what would you tell people about Copenhagen? I mean, I think most people listening to this have never been here. Like, what is it about this place?
Well, I mean, I've been here 9 years and I'm probably the worst person to ask because I work a lot.
Yeah, this is just a place for a kitchen that you live in.
It's like I work here. Ah, but that said, I do love working here. And when I moved here, I did love cooking here, love cooking with the produce. I do think that everything tastes a little different. You know, there's a lot of organic produce and a lot of these things haven't been touched with any pesticides. And I think that you can definitely feel a little bit of a difference with vegetables than what I was used to in the States. So that's been very exciting. But on the personal level, I do like biking everywhere.
Right.
I do like when I'm off that it feels calm and a little bit like this, waking up with the birds chirping.
Yeah.
That can happen in the city center as well.
Right.
It's a different feeling. When I moved here from New York, you know, I had this still like New York attitude.
Yeah.
I had been there for 3 years, you know, like shut the fuck up and things like that.
I hear that on a daily basis.
Get the fuck out of my way.
Yes. Oh, that too.
Yeah.
So you've met him.
God damn it. And, but, you know, when I first moved here, there was Sundays, like almost everything was closed.
Yeah.
Like you're literally like, you can't do anything but just chill out and do some laundry or something.
Yeah, right.
And at first I would hate it. Like, why isn't anything open? And this place is so crazy how it just stops.
Yeah.
And, you know, you feel that it's a huge inconvenience just because you were used to everything being available all the time in the States. And I've learned to really love that and just kind of accept things. It's made me a more patient person. But for example, we had a holiday yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
We're not getting like certain produce in and stuff. And we're like, this is crazy. Like,
right.
Or are there other prayer days that the same thing happens and the businesses are closed? And you're like, what?
That's amazing.
This is crazy. Like we're a restaurant. But you just accept it.
For a country that has decided that God is dead, you know, even Ascension Day will somehow like bring everything to a halt. It doesn't take a lot of excuses. Yeah,
they're out there drinking.
Yeah, right. So how do you build a team to make this food here? Like, do you train up the Danes? Do you import? How do you get your ingredients?
By boat.
Really?
Yeah, we ship tons. Tons. The last shipment in we had was 7 tons.
What port does it go out from?
From Mexico City.
Okay.
Mexico City. And we get it from Oaxaca. Maybe some other different things from different places, but...
What do you get from Oaxaca?
Chiles. Okay. The dried chiles.
Yeah.
It's about 7 different chiles. Some of the spices. And sometimes chocolate and vanilla.
Okay.
And mainly the corn.
That's the thing.
Mainly the corn.
Speaking of the masa.
Yeah. I'm also trying to work with different people.
Yeah.
Because it kind of like sparked a thought that I shouldn't just get the corn from Oaxaca.
Yeah.
That maybe like spread it out a bit.
Right, right.
Get it from different parts of Mexico.
That's interesting.
And it's not easy because whoever is going to help us export has to be able to export tons of corn.
Right.
And have the paperwork and the manpower. So it's a whole process, you know. You pay up front.
Yeah.
Then they pay the people that will harvest, and then they have to package it. So I signed for the restaurant in September. Yeah, but going back to our staff, they're coming from Mexico, most of them.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And then we have one Danish guy. We have one guy from Ecuador.
How's he doing?
He's amazing. One guy from Ecuador, but the Danish guy speaks Spanish.
Okay.
So we do service in Spanish sometimes.
So that's the language of the restaurant
in
the kitchen?
It's a Spanglish restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. But it's fun. I mean, the guy that we have on is such a great guy.
Yeah.
He's like really loves Latin flavors.
Yeah, yeah.
He's worked in a lot of Latin American restaurants.
Okay.
So it's a lot of fun to have him.
Is he a good like sounding board for like the Danish palate, you know? We're just like, is this going to disgust a Danish person? Like, will they understand this? Will they go crazy for it?
Or like someone comes in speaking Danish, we're like, Oliver, go.
Right.
Tell them we're closed. No. And I'm talking about this because when I opened in Taqueria, we had a lot, like almost everyone was foreign.
Mm.
Like European.
Not Mexican.
No. And that was very hard.
Right.
That was very hard.
Just explaining
everything.
Yeah.
The second time we opened the shop, because it's seasonal. I had 6 people, like, well, there was like 20 people working for the summer, but like 6 people at once that were all new.
Wow.
All students.
Yeah.
It's like from Poland to from Germany to this place, and no one's ever seen a tortilla.
Wow. Oh my God.
And just explaining this and you're busy, you're like, no.
Do you have like, is there like a single foul that you remember? Like a single, like, you know, violation of kind of the cosmic laws of Mexican food?
For me, the only foul, and I'll do it now, is like, take care of the masa. You know, sometimes because the weather fluctuates in the summer, if it gets really hot, we have to refrigerate it or this and that. That's the only one where I'm like, pay attention. Like, this is like the basis of everything.
Right.
You know, you have to take care of it.
What are you making of this stuff that's going on in the States? I mean, obviously, it's been like 2.5 years since dude rode down an escalator and called Mexicans rapists. It's been brutal, man. It's hard to look at from the inside and just, you know, people, even my son's school in New York, you know, it's like Mexicans are jerks.
I mean, in your son's school?
Yeah, it's fucked up. It's like,
wow.
Yeah, it's really happening, you know, it's really happening. But I don't know what that looks like from out here. I mean, obviously you go back and so on, but how's that been feeling? And like, do people here make the connection that Mexicans are like under attack? They don't care.
No, I mean, I think that everyone thinks Trump's stupid. And everybody kind of like, I feel bad for you, or I feel bad for your country, or they see an idiot that's kind of doesn't understand the world.
Right.
I try not to watch anything anymore.
Yeah.
In the beginning I was, and I was getting very emotional about it, especially when he just went into office. And I remember I was in Japan. We were doing a pop-up there with Takeria.
Oh, nice.
And I was so upset about it. I was crying.
Yeah.
And I thought, it's so unfair that kind of outlook is kind of made on Mexicans or immigrants. Because, you know, my parents, I feel like my parents work so hard and they're good people. And then I think about, you know, that's everyone's parents. It's just kind of like trying to wait it out like everybody else. It's a fucked up world. All I can do is, I guess, try to lift it a little in Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is another little slight thing that I like to think about. Because, you know, we talked about how there isn't very good Mexican food in Europe.
Yeah.
I would like to change that a little bit.
Right.
You know, and I do have a good work ethic, and I am very curious, and I know what tasty food is. So I feel like I can carry that a little bit and try to do my best.
Yeah.
At least in a place where I know that it deserves more attention.
I mean, I have to tell you, this is like a dangerous thing you're doing, because like Denmark, I mean, it's the same way. A lot of European countries, you've got like, you know, subsidized healthcare. You've got great bike lanes, you've got like, free education, and literally, I just has always felt like the deal breaker, the thing that would just keep an American from feeling, you know, whole in this place was or at least a Californian, was the lack of Mexican food. Where that circle, then it's just gonna be, that'll be it. Like, we're all gonna come, because like, I won't have to just sit around. And you know, I lived in Berlin for a long time, and I was like, fuck. Love this place. No tacos.
Or like, he needs like some spicy food.
Yeah, yeah. So what's happening after Sanchez? Or is it like, I mean, listen, you just opened this place half a year ago. Do you feel like this is the place that you just want to keep working on? Or do you want to spread this out? Are we going to see you in other towns in Denmark?
I really want to focus on it for now and see where, like, give it a little more definition, like see how it develops in a year. It's so funny. But people really loved it. So that's what it's for.
Well, and it's amazing. It's like, it's a great confidence that you have to do this and to not let other people define you in Mexican food. I'm kind of fascinated by that.
You know, in the beginning, and I feel like it's still the beginning, it kind of bothered me where I was trying to figure out what kind of box I'm in.
Yeah.
I grew up in Chicago. I always kind of consider myself Mexican.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in a Mexican neighborhood. I spoke Spanish as my first language. You know, my Mexican parents spoke Spanish at home, English at school. Spanish at home, English at school. So, you know, I always felt Mexican. And then it wasn't until I left that I felt like American.
Huh.
You know, because everybody's like, "Oh, where are you from?" And I said, "Mexico." Like, "But you're from the States." Like, "Okay, well, I guess I'm American." But I didn't grow up American. In a way I did, I guess, but there's more attachment to the Mexican culture.
Well, one of the things that I think a number of people should learn in the States is you definitely grew up American. Like, that's a very American childhood, right? Like, what could be more American than that?
So I always tell people, I'm from Chicago and I have Mexican parents. Decide whatever you want,
and
I guess.
Cooking in Copenhagen and making good food. And...
Well, I mean, it's also a little bit for Mexicans. Like, oh, you're not Mexican. It's like, well, it bothered me a little bit in the beginning.
When you go back there and there's
that
sense.
Yeah, but I think it doesn't matter in the end. At the end of the day, I'm a chef and I want to cook the food that my parents grew up eating. Or I want to cook in this kind of way or use these ingredients. Yeah. So I don't care anymore.
Right. That's a nice place to reach. Does it feel good?
Yeah, it does feel good.
Yeah.
Because I know I can trust myself a little.
What's the best thing in Danish food? I just got it. I'm not trolling here. That's a serious question.
The best thing, I would say my favorite thing would be, it's not food, but dairy.
Okay.
Yeah. Just, I think it's really nice dairy here.
So all the crema, like the stuff you're doing at the restaurant, that's based on Danish dairy?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I think that's pretty beautiful. Yeah. Like, just, we get queso fresco made for us a few times a week.
Oh, nice.
And it isn't exactly the same, but we work with a very small Italian group of guys. And we kind of went there and showed them how to make, like, quesillo.
Yeah.
Like, stretching, like, a type of mozzarella and adding extra salt. And making the queso fresco. And it's not the same. It's not as dry as we're used to.
Yeah.
But it's still like, wow, this is a really nice cheese.
This is one of the things I never understood about Danish people. I love Danish people. Sorry, Danish people. But they live in this place like Limfjord oysters are the size of a hubcap. Like, they have this incredible seafood everywhere. And all they want to do is eat fucking pork. It's just like a pig economy here. Why is that? I mean,
yeah, pork's delicious.
That's why. Carnitas for life. Yeah, okay.
I'll eat a carnitas over an oyster any day.
All right. I think you may have found the right country then. Yeah. You're at home with your people.
The Trip is hosted by me, Nathan Thornburg. Produced by Josie Holtzman and Danielle Roth of Future Projects. Our editor is Roads and Kingdoms' Taffy Mukanyadze. Our executive producers are me and Matt Goulding, also of Roads and Kingdoms. Thanks, as always, to Adele Rodriguez for the art and Dan the Automator for the music. Next week, I'm back in the Bay, talking with this man.
For me, it's like it has to be, there's got to be some sort of emotional, physical, psychological, political, like intellectual jeopardy in going through the thing for me to feel like it's actually worth doing, because I don't think I'm a good enough host to just pull it off on my smile.
W. Kamau Bell is a comedian and an Emmy Award-winning host of the best show left on CNN, United Shades of America. He's also a deeply good dude, and together we got so jacked on Japanese energy drinks that our hearts started hammering and the words just tumbled out all over the table and the floor and into the microphones. I hope you'll give it a listen.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.